This podcast is designed to help you understand the laws of our land. I am your host, Hattie Savari, and here to help you every step of the way, whether you are a tenant, landlord, parent, child, employee, employer, neighbour or business owner, and we are all most certainly consumers. The law is in your life every single day with over 180 episodes and 5 million downloads. Get ready to listen and empower yourself with tons of jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Hello and welcome back to our podcast at Get Legally Speaking. Our legal conversation today will be on Can I Claim for a Defective Home, aka property law. I am joined by barrister Antonia Hawker from Lamb Chambers in London. Antonia is an extremely able and dedicated advocate who has a strong practice in property litigation, sought out by those who are looking for legal assistance that provide an effective solution, and she can provide an effective solution. Antonia is experienced at acting in multi-party cases, mastering the facts and considering the issues. She is also listed in the Legal 500 as the leading barrister in property litigation. Antonia, thank you so much for joining me today.
Good morning, Hattie, and good morning, everyone who's listening.
Yes, a very good morning indeed. So, buying a property can be a complicated and stressful process, and although the majority of property transactions proceed without a hitch, it is an unfortunate reality of life that innocent buyers are sometimes left in a situation where they have purchased a defective property that needs to be fixed through no fault of their own. In most cases, if you buy something and are unhappy with your purchase, you can go back to the seller and ask for a refund. However, it does not usually work that way with property. Following the Grenfell fire in June 2017, in which 72 people tragically lost their lives, the government pledged to make meaningful reforms within the construction industry and as a priority. In today's episode, Antonia and I will be discussing whether or not a claim can be made on defects of a property after its purchase, to whom you could consider bringing a claim for the costs of putting a property right, and much more useful and jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. So, Antonia, let's just kill the elephant in the room and go straight in. If someone discovers major issues with their property after it's been purchased, and obviously those issues we're talking about that they were not aware of during their purchase, say the cost will be £5,000 upwards to repair, so, you know, significant sum. Can they go back to the sellers and make a claim to remedy the repair?
Hattie, it's important when we're looking at this question to first of all look at who they bought the property from, because the situation is going to be very different if somebody buys a property from a developer. So it's a brand new property that's just been built. There'll be one scenario that operates in that sort of situation, and then an entirely different scenario where you buy a much older property from someone else, say, who's been living in there for the last 10 years and they've owned it. So what I want to do is split it up into those two different situations. And if we look first at the situation where somebody's buying a brand new property from a property developer or a builder or a property development company, there are laws and statutes there that potentially can protect people. So under something that's called the Defective Premises Act, if the property is unfit for human habitation when the person buys it, then they can potentially make a claim against the developer or the builder or whoever it is that sold it to them. And it would also, as I'm going to probably repeat over and over again today, be really important to look at the terms of the contract with the developer or the builder that sold you the property and look what that contract says in terms of the property that they're selling you. Because if it says they will provide you with a property that has X, Y, and Z all in place, and then when you actually buy the property, it turns out those things aren't in place, then you may well have a claim against that developer under the contract because they would have breached the terms of that contract. So it's perhaps a little bit easier to bring a claim against a developer or a builder in respect of a new build property. than it is to bring a claim against just a lay person who sold you the property that they've had for the last 10 years.
And I think that for the purposes of this podcast, it will be really helpful for us to understand what can people do if they have purchased an existing property that's not new. And I do think it's really key, what you said is really key, to be able to differentiate between the new property and an existing property. Because, I mean, while sellers, I think, don't have to disclose physical defects, I think that the buyer may be able to claim some damages. And the tort of deceit really is, I think, what we're looking at here. If the seller has deliberately concealed a known physical defect, where does somebody stand there?
So that's exactly the kind of position that a lot of people find themselves in. And actually, not that long ago, I dealt with a case involving exactly that sort of scenario. And as I said, and I'm going to probably get very boring today, but...
No, you're not boring, Antonia. We're going to make this one interesting.
This is all a matter of contract law. So the important thing is to go and look at the terms of the contract. And Hattie, what you're talking about, the tort of deceit, is also known as misrepresentation and a fraudulent misrepresentation.
Yes.
Which is a legal concept in relation to contract law. And in this kind of scenario, what it would be referring to is a scenario where the seller deliberately lies about something that they know is wrong with the property, yes, in order to try and persuade somebody to buy it.
And hid it. They deceived, they misrepresented exactly what they were selling. They thought, well, I'll just keep quiet about the fact that the roof's got a great big hole in there and the surveyor's just not going to pick it up, really, or something.
Yes, exactly. Now, most sale contracts operate on standard terms. The Law Society, which is a solicitor's body, provides standard terms for sale contracts for properties. And they'll often have a standard term that says something like this: neither party can rely on any representation made by the other unless made in writing by the other or his conveyancer. But this doesn't exclude liability for fraud or recklessness.
And that's now, the key point. That's the exactly. key point, isn't it? Doesn't exclude fraud or recklessness.
Absolutely. So let's say you buy a property. The first thing you normally do is go and have a look around. And you might say to the seller, can I go and have a look in the loft? And they might say, well, it's pretty difficult to get up there because we've not got a ladder and you won't really be able to see very much. But I can assure you it's just an empty space with some insulation and there's no problems up there and it's absolutely fine. And then, Hattie, as you say, if it subsequently turns out that there is a giant gaping hole in the roof, then what you'd also have to show is that the seller knew there was that giant gaping hole in the roof when they said to you, no, it's all fine up there. Then they clearly deliberately lied to you. And those are the important things that you need to establish either fraudulent misrepresentation or deceit, that they've deliberately lied about something to try and persuade you to buy that property.
Yes, to deceive you into buying it, basically. Exactly. It's as simple as that, isn't it?
And that you have bought it because of those misrepresentations that they made.
We are going to go to discuss professionals involved in assisting you with buying a property, like surveyors and conveyancers, later on in this podcast. But then there is that whole question of buyer beware. And people do hear those terms and think, well, I should have known, or I should have been able to look into it and see that. In the description in the contract that you just read out, that is a standard term in a contract when people are buying properties that they need, you know, you can't go back and claim recompense. Where does people stand with that? Because, as I said, without us going into just yet what the conveyancer and potentially surveyor duties and liabilities could be, where do people stand when you say, well, I should have known? And because of the buyer be aware point in law, I can't go back and say, well, you didn't tell me that the drainage was awful and actually very dysfunctional, the whole property. I myself actually lived in a property where the drainage was a really, really serious health and safety issue that we didn't know about either. But where do people stand, Antonia, with that?
So there's a few points to make in respect to this. First of all, when you buy a property, there's a form that sellers are normally asked to complete, and it's a Law Society property information form. And that form asks an awful lot of questions about the property, and the seller is asked to give an awful lot of information. But they're only asked to answer specific questions. So if they simply don't put something in there that's not relevant, they've not deliberately concealed anything from you, so they've not been fraudulent. If they lie in that form and there's something in that form that's not right, then they've made a false representation.
Okay, hold on, let's backtrack. You're talking about a document that is on the Law Society's website.
Yes, and every person who sells a residential property will, the buyer's solicitors will ask the seller's solicitors to fill that form.
Right,
in.
So that is something that everyone has to do as a seller, because it's part of the conveyancing process that will go through the food chain from the solicitor down to the seller.
Exactly, and it Perfect. Will say things like, what lampshades are you leaving in the property? Everything from that through to, are you attached to the mains drainage? How much ground rent do you pay if it's a leasehold property? And that document tends to form part of the representations made as part of the contract.
Right.
So if anything in that form is wrong, and that's what's caused you to be persuaded to buy this property, and you've found out it's wrong, and that's what's costing you £5,000, again, you've potentially got a claim. But that form isn't going to cover everything. It might not cover, for example, the drainage issue that you raised, Hattie. And when you go around as a layperson and inspect a property, you might not notice the drainage issue. And unless you specifically ask, the seller hasn't got any obligation to tell you
but
about that
drainage issue. Isn't this crazy? A property is probably the single biggest purchase people make in their lives. Most people, most of us. So you would think that they're, you know, there would be a little bit more there just to protect us against buying something where there's serious defects that affects the property, which were not disclosed. You just think there'd be a little bit more there than simply being able to say, well, because the form didn't ask the question and the seller didn't divulge it, therefore the seller perhaps cannot be held liable. Do you see where I'm coming from with this?
I do see where you're coming from. And that's why the single most important bit of advice I would give to anyone buying a property is to get a good survey done.
A detailed survey, not just that. Right. And I'm going to go on to surveyors. I will talk about that bit. Because additionally, I mean, under this sort of section one, I think it is, of the Defective Premises Act, also known, as we said it before, the DPA, any eligible person may have a cause of action for breach of duties imposed on a person taking on work in connection with a dwelling. Any person who acquires a legal or equitable interest in the dwelling. And what we're saying here is, say the seller said, well, I had an extension done. I relied on the builder. If the builder did the electrics or the sewage or the plumbing or whatever, and it's really badly defective, I relied on that person's expertise. So the key bit here is the new person, the buyer, buys the property, tries to go back to the seller. The seller says, well, actually, the builder who did the work is liable. Would that work? Would that kind of food chain be an option?
Well, the potential difficulty that you might have is who the relationship is with, because you could be 10 people down the line before anybody spots the problem with these electric.
True.
And so by that point, it's often very difficult to go back to a builder who may or may not be in existence anymore.
Yes.
But the kind of scenario you talk about is exactly what often happens, because the poor person who's selling the property might have had no idea that there was a problem either. They might not have known about the problem. The buyer doesn't know about the problem until something suddenly crops up. And as you say, the person who's really to blame for all of this is the person who did the work potentially years or decades ago, because they're the expert. And again, that's why what you really want is another expert who's going to look at the property before you buy it and say, here's what's potentially wrong with it. Because you as a layperson and the seller as a layperson aren't going to be able to spot those defects just by wandering around and having a look at it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, let's talk about time frame now, because as you said, maybe seller wasn't aware, buyer wasn't aware, some time has passed in which the property, you know, from when the property was purchased, is there a certain time frame in which a claim can be brought for a defective element of a property after the purchase?
So there's a what's called a limitation period in most contract claims, which is a 6-year limitation period. And that means that your claim can be brought any time within 6 years from when the damage is caused to you. Now, it's important to consider what that phrase, when the damage is caused, means in this context. Because what it probably means in this context is the point in time at which you buy the property.
Ah, that's key.
And the
key.
Reason for that is...
That's key, Antonia, isn't it? Not from when you actually saw and realised the defect. So say the defect, the plumbing just burst and everything went wrong and a plumber came and said, well, actually, this has been here for a long time, this issue. It's just blown up at this point. And that was 3 years into your purchase. It's not from the time that you've realised the defect. You're saying it could very well be the date of purchase of the property.
Yes. So if the baseline starting point is 6 years from damage, and the damage arguably here is you've bought a property that's actually worth less than you've paid for it because of this defect. Now, there's some caveats to that, because if it's damage that you didn't know about and couldn't possibly have known about at the time, then that limitation period can be extended to 3 years from when you become aware of the damage.
That's interesting.
But if your surveyor could have got a surveyor to find out about it and didn't, you can't exploit that extra 3 years. And there's another potential extension in cases of fraud, fraudulent misrepresentation and deceit that we were talking about earlier, that there can potentially be another extension of 6 years from when you find out about the fraud. So I suppose what I would say about this is it isn't straightforward. There's quite a lot of different options. And so I would suggest getting legal advice if you're not sure about this and doing that sooner rather than later.
No, absolutely. I mean, you can just see it, can't you? Because I could actually very clearly see that one of the arguments before before the crux of the claim can be dealt with is, was the seller aware, should the seller have been aware or not, you know, and then who else was involved? And I'm going to go on to that in a moment. But what steps can someone take to prove beyond reasonable doubt that the issues exist and the extent to which they exist? I mean, obviously, the surveyor's report or the conveyancer's report would have been provided. Surveyor's report here is the most important one, I'd say. I would say go and get an expert's report. Go and get an expert who's, and be careful when you instruct experts, because you need them to be an expert where the court would accept their report. You don't want to pay for an expert in the beginning, have to end up in court and then say, well, it's not compliant. The expert's report is not compliant with what the court needs to see. But what else can somebody do?
Hattie, I agree. The most important thing is getting an expert report. And as you said, it needs to be somebody who's familiar with giving evidence to courts. Who that expert is might depend on the situation. It could be a surveyor, maybe an electrician or an engineer, depending on what you're dealing with. What else can people do? Well, if it's a physical issue and it's a physical issue that you can see, take photos of it or potentially take videos of it. I've dealt with cases of defective guttering, and people have taken videos when it's raining heavily and you can see guttering, water from the guttering flooding down walls of the building. Take videos, keep a diary. Again, if it's something that reoccurs, keep a diary written down about every time it happens. And the other, I think, important thing to say is it's not always physical problems with a property. Sometimes you might be dealing with an ongoing neighbour dispute that the seller fails to tell you about.
That will get messy. That's going to get messy. Goodness gracious.
Absolutely. So in that scenario, what you might want to go and do is speak to some of the other neighbours and get evidence as to what people, how long that had been going on for. Speak to other people in the area and find out what they know about it. But the important thing is to just get as much evidence as you can. But the expert report, Hattie, as you said, is absolutely going to be the key evidence. And again, if you're not sure how to do that, go and speak to a lawyer and they can help you to instruct an expert properly so you're not wasting your money doing it twice.
Yes, because experts' reports do cost some money and you need to make sure that, yes, they're not only an expert in what they do, but they are actually qualified to provide experts' reports for the eyes of the court. Even if you're not intending to issue any proceedings at court, even if you're not intending to go to court, get information and documents, especially if you're paying for it, that stack up. What about the insurer of the building? So your building's insurance. So you bought this property, you didn't know these defects existed, and then you find out that they do. And say if that they won't cover the cost. Say if the insurer says, well, sorry, but these are pre-existing issues because insurers send around their own surveyors to look into it. What are the initial steps someone should take if they want to consider taking legal action against the sellers? Or perhaps let's talk about the surveyor. What responsibility does the surveyor have to be able to uncover certain defects or any defects that may crop up? No one can look into everything, but what do we have to say about that?
Again, Hattie, as I said, I might get boring, and really what I'm going to say here is it depends on the terms of the contracts with these people. So first of all, to deal with what you suggested about the surveyor, look at the terms of the contract with the surveyor that you appointed when you bought the property.
And by God, that's going to be a long document, let me tell you. It's going to be the smallest print you're ever going to read as well, I can assure you.
It is. And so, again, what you might want to do is consider getting some legal advice on that. But a very brief tip is that any professional who acts for you as a consumer, they've got a duty to provide the service to you with reasonable care and skill. And so if they've missed a glaringly obvious defect that was well within the realms of the things they should be looking for, then there's a very good chance that that surveyor is potentially on the hook and that you may well have a claim against them. But you need to check the terms of the contract and what they might have excluded liability for.
Yes.
Equally with your building insurer, look at the terms of the policy. Sometimes they will have excluded the responsibility to pay for pre-existing damage. It might depend on what their surveyor has said. Sometimes, in my experience, they will pay out eventually, but only if you've made an attempt to bring a claim against the seller of the property first. And so the building insurer might require you to jump through the hoops of that process and will only pay out if that claim, for some reason, isn't successful. And so if in doubt, my advice would be, first thing to do, contact the insurer and ask them how it works and what the terms of your policy are.
Absolutely. And also, very good point. Thank you, Antonia. But also to add to that, some buildings insurance have legal expenses cover for you. So any legal help that you may need, that if they will have legal expenses covered, then your legal costs could be covered for that. And one of the things I want to mention is that you do direct access, Antonia, as a barrister. And I just want to quickly explain to our listeners what that is. It means you could go directly to a barrister, so you can go directly to Antonia to get your help, cutting out the middleman, which effectively would be a solicitor's firm. However, you would need to call her chambers and speak to her clerk and say, this is my situation. I would like to talk about how much it would cost, what's involved. Is my case suitable for direct access? Because direct access cases where you work directly with the barrister on your claim means that you have to be really astute on doing your papers, getting everything in order, getting the information and whatever is required. And it really is up to the barrister to be able to say, yes, this is suitable for direct access. We don't need the extra assistance of a solicitor in between. But, I mean, you know, surveyors do have a duty, as you said. And if they've, as you said, if they've failed to spot something that they should have really dealt with, then there could be a claim there. And this is if your insurer's not dealing with it. And, you know, then you go back to the conveyancing file of your solicitors. That's a very important document, I think, documents to look at, Antonia, right?
Yes, absolutely. And it's the sort of information that if you were ever to end up in court in a claim against the seller of a property, the court would need to see the conveyancing file, because that's where you'd have in writing all of the information, all of the questions that your solicitors asked the seller's solicitors, all of the answers that the sellers gave to those questions. You'd almost certainly have a copy of the survey, and you'd have a copy of any other written representations that had been made. So that's going to be really important evidence, both of what people have said and potentially of the condition of the property as the surveyor saw it when you bought the property.
Yes, and I think for anybody listening who's going to buy a property, it's a little bit wary about any defects with it. Get a detailed survey done. For anybody that's in the position that has bought the property and become aware of defects afterwards, get a copy of your conveyancing file and get legal assistance as soon as possible. Get somebody to look over that. Contact your builder's insurance quickly to see, A, whether they could provide you with cover, B, whether they have legal expenses cover. Because if you get the advice very early on, you can plan as to what the steps that need to be taken, who can help, what's the cost of the help going to look like, or is your insurer, if you covered with your insurer for the cost of that legal help, and then you can, you know, make plans of how it's going to be dealt with. Got time to really quickly look at one more area, Antonia, and that is, should you inform your mortgage lender of any issues that have come about, major issues? Because clearly they're going to have it, they've got an interest in the property, they've financially lent you the money to purchase it. What are we saying about that?
So, Hattie, what I'd say about that is this. Again, check what your mortgage terms and conditions say. It may well be that you are required to let the mortgage lender know if there's anything wrong with the property that might be considered serious or to affect the value. Because it's the effect on the value that's important, because, as you said, that the lender has an interest in the property. If there's any risk to their security, if there's any risk that the property is actually worth less than the money that you owe them, then they will want to know about that sooner rather than later. You obviously might not be required to let them know if something perhaps is going to cost a few hundred quid to be fixed and it's not a major issue. So check the terms of the policy, and if in doubt, get in touch with the lender and ask them whether it's something yes. that you need to make them formally aware of.
No, indeed. I mean, if you're not sure, ask your lender, ask your insurer. You know, don't be afraid to ask questions to people that were involved with the purchase or that are, you know, have an interest in it, like your mortgage lender. But Antonia, that's all we've got time for.
Thank you very much, Hattie.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for your wise, wise words. And what I'll say to our listeners is, don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcasts. And you can find us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and YouTube by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you for listening.